So here we are at module two, your brain and stress. So hopefully you recorded all the stresses you noticed and added to it as they came into your awareness. I'd really like to know why I'm doing something, so I'm going to tell you the purpose of that exercise. You might remember from module one that I told you about how our amygdala senses stresses in the environment faster than our conscious brain can register them. And I also mentioned that we're faced with so many stresses these days that our conscious brain doesn't have time to go through the snake coiled rope decision. Writing down all the things that stress you is a way of making those unconscious things conscious. When we know what our amygdala is being triggered by, we have the option of using our executive brain, the one that makes all the rational decisions, to override the stress response. So we get the no snake, no stress response. How do we override the stress response? I'm going to give you some strategies to try. So first of all, sometimes all we need to do is remind ourselves that the stress we're feeling is our amygdala in overdrive. This is kind of simple, but it works really well. When we experience a lot of stress and our amygdala is on fire, we become primed to look for other dangers and stresses around us. For example, if we're running away from a saber-toothed tiger, suddenly a ditch that could trip us up is dangerous, some sharp rocks that we could slowly and gently climb over under normal circumstances suddenly become very stressful because we might have to take them at a million miles an hour and cut our feet to shreds. Also, things like that cute bunny is suddenly scary as hell. I mean, what if it bolted across our escape path and tripped us as we were running? In the modern world, instead of our amygdala functioning like the guard dog that responds to real threats, it starts functioning like the overprotective mother who warns us, "You'll catch a death of cold if you don't take that extra jacket, and make sure you wear clean underwear in case you get hit by a truck, and don't order oysters at the restaurant. People die from eating them, you know. Oh, and speaking of restaurants, you want to make sure the cutlery's clean. Who knows what you could catch?" So when we remind ourselves that our amygdala is in overprotective mum mode, we stop giving it fuel. It allows our body to start to return to normal functioning because we're not being driven by these unconscious fears that we believe. See, our simple little brains can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. If our little brain is being stressed by a potential business failure, it believes that failure is happening. And it therefore believes it needs to be prepared for every eventuality. So living on the street, dying of starvation, etc. If we remind ourselves that it's just our amygdala being overactive, we've already started to say, not so sure this is dangerous stuff, and I'm not so sure this is the truth. So that will override that fear. So number two, hope overrides stress and fear, so get hopeful. Our brain processes information in a hierarchy, and you guessed it, fear and stressful things take priority. There's a lot of research that supports this, which I won't go into because it's probably not that interesting to anyone except science geeks like me. You're just going to have to believe me. The only thing that overrides fear in our brain is hope. Yep, beautiful, shining hope. So now that you know what your stresses are, you can use hope to override your brain's reaction to them. So let's just say I'm stressed about not having a partner and having to do everything on my own, because this is some of the things that my clients come to me with. My brain tells me it's scary being on my own. It tells me that it's harder to survive financially. It tells me that people who don't have partners die earlier than people who are married. It tells me that if I get sick, I'm stuffed, I'll lose my house, won't be able to feed myself, and will wind up living in a caravan park. This could all be subconsciously eating away at me, creating more stress as my brain finds more and more things that are stressful about being without a partner. Because remember, it's on alert all the time. And once it gets into this loop of looking for stressful things, it's going to keep looking for lots of other related stressful things too. So if I know that I'm stressing about being partnerless, then I can pull hope into the equation. I will eventually meet someone. I do have friends I can turn to. I have a job that supports me and income protection that will cover my butt if I'm sick. I have a lot of personal resources that would help me get through something really terrible. So I've overridden the fear hierarchy and I've stopped the spread of negative things in my brain. Because this is another crazy thing our brains do. Rather than stopping at having a few stressed out thoughts, our brains try to create big networks that link this big stress with lots of other stresses, creating stress of gargantuan proportions. I've actually seen footage of the dendrites reaching out and searching for other brain bits to connect to. If your focus is on stress, then your brain will look to make other connections with stressful thoughts. Which brings me to the next strategy. So this is the 3-to-1 rule. So for every stressy thought, if you create 3 non-stressy thoughts, you'll combat it. We need 3 positive thoughts to every negative thought to create a competing network in the brain. So that means for every stress thought, you need to have 3 positive thoughts to switch, or hopeful thoughts even, to switch your brain off overprotective mother mode and back into sleeping guard dog mode. So what happens is, because it's a survival mechanism that we needed to pay attention to all the dangerous things in our environment to ensure our survival, we're actually primed to pay attention to those things more. What happens though is, if we want to create a network that competes with that, we have to triple the size of it. If you think of it, if any of you are like Star Trek fans or something like that, if you think of the Death Star, that huge, dark, looming spaceship, that's the size of our negative thinking. And if you think about like some tiny little single-person spaceship flying through space, that's the size of our positive thing. So we have to work so much harder to get that one up and running so that it even has a chance of competing with the negative and stressful thinking. The thing is, though, that our amygdala knows when we're trying to fool it. So coming up with stuff that's blatantly not true won't be very helpful. You might have heard people doing affirmations and things like that that are so far removed from where they are at the time. Your brain knows the difference between how realistic that is and not, and it just won't believe it. So it's not going to work. Try to look for positives that have their basis in reality. So most of what we stress about isn't necessarily based in reality, but apparently the antidote to stressing has to be. Sometimes brains are so difficult. So take a moment now to go back to your list of stresses and see if you can first of all come up with some statements of hope, and then see if you can multiply them by 3. There's a sheet for you to write your 3-to-1s on page 7 of the workbook. So another strategy that works amazingly well is using your natural rhythms to de-stress your brain. We're bombarded every day by millions of things that keep our brain active and on alert. Everything is changing so quickly, and we have so many drains on our attention that our poor little brains wind up feeling really stressed. On top of that, the more our brains work, the hotter they get. And the hotter they get, the more time they need to cool down. So have you ever noticed at the end of a day where you've had to concentrate a lot, you're really, really tired? Well, that's your brain saying, let me chill out, dude, it's scorching in here. In our stressful and fast-paced life, we don't often listen to what our brain or body has to say about things. We override our need for rest, we push ourselves to the limit, and this is, of course, extremely stressful. One of the ways we can start to overcome some of this additional non-necessary stress on our brains and our body is to start to listen to its cries and its rhythms. So we all have natural rhythms that fluctuate throughout the day. You might have heard of circadian rhythms that control our sleep-wake cycle. So they're big, quite noticeable rhythms. We wake up at roughly the same time every day and get tired about the same time each night. And they generally operate over about a 24-hour period. But what we also have are ultradian rhythms. They're much smaller, much less noticeable cycles. So one of these ultradians in particular runs at about a 90 to 120 minute cycle. It modulates lots of really important things like our mental alertness, our mood, our creativity, our memory, and our performance. On the upswing, we're at our best. So you might have noticed through the day that there are times when you're on fire. You're sharp, you learn things better, you seem to have great ideas just blowing right out of you. It's really your genius time. And you might have noticed also through the day that even though you thought you were on fire, you find yourself staring out the window or zoning out while someone's talking. That's the downswing, and it usually lasts about 15 to 20 minutes. So our subconscious mind says, I need a chance to process all this stuff, I'm shutting you down for a bit. So our unconscious mind tells our conscious mind to close the shutters and have a little nana nap. It's almost like your brain saying, I'm not listening, I'm not listening. So I don't know if I've mentioned yet, I'm pretty sure that I have though, that your subconscious mind does about 95% of the work. So we really need to look after it if we want to be at our peak performance. So anyway, when the subconscious says shut down, we don't often listen. Usually that's the time we reach for a coffee or something sweet to perk us up, when what we really need is a break. This is the downtime on our Arcadian rhythms. And it's also the time that our brains like to cool down and find a place to file all the things it's been dealing with. If we don't allow this downtime, we get, you guessed it, stressed. So imagine this. There's a little diagram in your notes. So imagine that for approximately a 90-minute period, we're really at our peak. You know, it's thinking clearly, performing well, great ideas, full of energy, and then we start to dip down. So it's 90 minutes of switched on, 20 minutes of switched off, 90 on, 20 off, and this just keeps happening all through the day. So stress occurs at the point that we're on the downswing and we keep pushing ourselves. If we chronically ignore this rhythm, we interrupt our natural flow and we start to develop chronic stress issues like high blood pressure, fatigue, headaches and sore muscles, not to mention feeling low or depressed or anxious, which are all signs of stress. If you can find something quiet and non-demanding to do in your ultradian downtime, you'll be reducing the stress on your brain and the stress on your body. Looking after your brain and respecting your internal rhythms like this will make you more productive and much less stressed. So if you're worried about what other people might think of you having ultradian downtime, get them involved in it too. Or you could tell them that science says brain cells shrink when you're stressed and that severely impacts performance. So I need to honor science and have a break. Just taking even 10 or 15 minutes now could potentially save you a lot of stressfully unproductive time later. And this is really important to remember because when we tend to be the, you know, these high functioning, really successful people, we don't tend to allow ourselves this downtime. We get addicted almost to wanting to fill every second and be busy all day, every day. The thing is though, research really does show that with these breaks, we perform so much better for so much longer of the day because we're not utilizing more energy to push us through these downtimes, and we think so much clearer because our brains are having time to cool down and our subconscious is having time to process information that's really important. So turn to your workbook and brainstorm some ideas on what you could do in your ultradian downtime. So getting outside away from artificial lights or other non-natural distractions is the ultimate for ultradian downtime, but there are plenty of other things you can do that will help, even if it's only for 10 minutes. So I've left some examples for you to get you started on page 8 of the workbook. And you know what? It sounds like this is already a lot of activities for you to do for this module. So before I start to stress you out too much, I'm going to finish up here and see you for module 3.